Welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast from ExchangeWire, bringing you the latest news and views from the world of ad tech, media, and marketing.
Hello, and welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast. I'm Grainne Reid, ExchangeWire's Head of Marketing and your host for today. I'm delighted to be joined by Teodora Tapabicharova, Programmatic Strategy at Ballet Nas. Teddy, it's great to have you here today.
Thank you for having me. Very excited to be here.
Yeah, we're also very excited to have you on stage with us at ATS London in less than 2 weeks' time.
So looking forward to it.
Us too. And alongside Teddy, we have John Still, ExchangeWire's Head of Content. John, as always, delighted to have you.
Thank you very much for having me. Lovely to be back.
Well, as always, we're going to be breaking down three big news stories that made waves this week. Meta's accused of inflating ad results and sidestepping Apple's privacy rules. TikTok is forcing brands to hand over more control to its AI ad system. And major publishers like Wired and Business Insider call articles suspected to be written by AI. So let's dive into this. And first up, we've got Meta, who's facing news claims of ad misreporting. A whistleblower alleges the company manipulated results to boost its e-commerce format, shop ads. The complaint filed with the London Central Employment Tribunal by an ex-product manager says Meta inflated return on ad spend. Tactics allegedly included counting shipping fees as revenue, subsidising bids in auctions, and offering undisclosed discounts. Teddy, I'm going to come to you first on this one. How might these allegations affect advertisers' trust in Meta ad products?
So I think for us to be able to effectively discuss this, we need to go back to 2021 when Apple introduced the app tracking transparency feature, which we all know that was a huge thing back then and we're still using today. So back then in 2022, that cost Meta almost $10 billion. So they view this called resilience revenue, allegedly. They view that using the shop ads to keep tracking and transaction info on the Meta apps. So they wanted to push this product to the advertisers as it was bringing a lot of revenue, but also keeping the information at the app. So allegedly, there were claims that Mark Zuckerberg himself authorized $160 million budget to fund these free ad placements during the testing of the ads, which give the results the demo presented to the clients as successful results. So the product was really pushed to the market. And create impression that this is one of their best performing products. So for me, it's interesting to see how this really gonna shake Meta's ad revenue from buyers, especially because allegedly Meta was aware of the discrepancy and they were aware of everything that was happening, in the numbers. Because if Meta reported gross instead of net revenue to the clients, this means that the clients reported this revenue to the brands themselves and to the senior leadership, so more revenue and budget was pushed on Meta in the planning stages of media planning and buying, which I think is the main problem we're going to see. And it's very interesting to see if actually the brands pull back or continue to work with Meta, especially because I do not think that Meta will share which brands were got. So because Meta won't share which brands were actually affected by it. But what do you think?
Yeah, John, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, they've got plenty of previous. It's weird that this could be, the straw that breaks the camel's back for advertisers. And I think you're right, Teddy. Like, it's interesting to see who will pull back, how people are impacted. Meta's always felt like an ultimate black box to me, and we're seeing a lot more of it, God knows, with AI. But they sort of say, give us your money, this is the result you will get. And if advertisers are questioning or begin to question the reach that they've got, they've settled for 40 million 5 years ago in a similar, when they boosted overstated video numbers by 80%. They're still not out of the woods for many cases like this of boosting performance. And this is like a few little tricks that have convinced people that their spend is going places that it's really not, and subsidized it as well to kind of boost the numbers. They obviously faced like existential threat from when ATT came in and, like Teddy said, like a $10 billion black hole in their revenue overnight. But they, like, it's these resilience tactics that they baked in to show that it was still working. So I'm always surprised there's any trust left in Meta. But this, yeah, it's another little dagger into the trust.
And on that, Teddy, if these allegations are true, What does it say about how far platforms like Meta are willing to go to try and preserve ad revenue?
I think all of this is very sad if you think about it, because these practices, they're not sustainable. They're not in favor of the consumer in any way. So they should not be there at all. And it's very interesting to see where, you know, how far platforms or channels are really ready to go just to get more revenue from themselves. And I don't think this is a good practice or a good look to them or to the industry that we're actually representing and we're a part of. We don't want that to happen, but it's out of our hands for sure.
What do you think, John?
They just don't seem to care. They will, you know, offend, be castigated, receive some form of fine, do it again. And people still bring in their business because it has, like, on the face of it, it has unparalleled reach. Like, you advertise in Facebook, you can reach your target demographic no problem at scale. And people are lured by that. And the promise of it is, you see why brands keep going back, because it's sometimes for some, especially small businesses, it can be the only game in town, really, Facebook. But cooking the books isn't on. And this is what that is. This is, you know, a gross overestimation of what people have received for their spend. And yeah, until we have a regulatory body with teeth, then I'm sure they'll just keep doing it.
Yeah. And also, I think this really opens up the topic about transparency. Yeah. Because allegedly, the return on ad spend was not really shown on the dashboard, on Meta dashboard. So brands cannot actually see how that is calculated. So this is very interesting to think about that. And probably they'll be in post to make that more transparent on the dashboard itself, so brand actually knows how everything is calculated.
So interesting, because you'd have thought that was like basics on a dashboard to show where it's going. So they're just sort of taking the money and giving brands a thumbs up, just like,
yeah,
it's done really well.
Great, amazing stuff. Just keep giving us money.
That's it.
And as you said, I'm not sure how much really advertisers trust Meta, but as you said, because of the results it brings and everything shows so glossy and so perfect and so much revenue is coming back, they keep coming back to the platform to advertise more on it, because it doesn't matter, these news are coming. And as you said, there were so many news and so many breaches that they have done in the past, but it doesn't matter because the revenue is growing year on year, and actually 98% of their revenue, Meta's revenue, is coming from ads.
It's wild. Just start telling people that if they have a sponsored post on Exchange, well, they'll reach 50 million people. Just reassure them it's true. That's how we'll go about business from now on. Yeah, it's not on.
How should advertisers react then if they've been basing the campaign decisions on potentially inflated performance?
I mean, we shall see what happened, I think, because the news came out recently, but let's be real. They'll continue advertising on Meta because it's bringing good results that they can show, you know, to their senior leadership. If you're a big brand or if you're a sole trader or SME, it's a small way for you because you'll be working so hard on your product. You need sales, and Meta is performing incredibly well. The thing is, we really don't know what is happening behind the scenes.
Yeah. And in terms of regulatory consequences, if this is proven to be true, what do you think that could look like, Teddy?
So, this is true, as you said. GDPR, where is that owing? Also, Digital Markets Act, that is also breached. Consumer protection and competition laws are also breached. But also, additionally, they're breaching Apple's privacy rules as well. So I think this is also something big. And I don't think any platform should put itself in this position at all.
Yeah. Do you want anything to add?
Just like, it's a really tricky question. And, you know, we all would like regulators with teeth, and we want, you know, these like sanctions that are promised to be carried through, to be honest, and seen through. In likelihood, by their standards, small fine, pennies in the ocean, that they'll pay and then do it again or carry on in the same way they're going. I mean, as of yesterday, we're under threat from the guy in the White House to not put any regulation on US tech giants who are, you know, bestowing us with their benevolence by setting up and allowing European audiences to use their services. And they will be tariffed accordingly if we do regulate them. So the future of regulation is mucky at best, but I'd really like to see something stick. I mean, I can't count the amount of times I've been on this podcast and said those exact words. I would like to see some regulation stick, but I live in hope, but it's a drop in the ocean and then on to the next one.
But also, this really possesses, as you said, some more questions. So I want to know how long this has been going on. This, it really happened in 2022. Did it start recently? And also, do we really need a whistleblower to find out the truth that way? Because that really frustrates me. Why we need that? Why we put so much revenue and trust into brands and praise these brands? They're everywhere. And suddenly something like that happened. Where is the trust between, you know, the channel and us, the planners?
That's it, exactly that. And like you say, it's a shame that it takes that. And it's, you know, it takes one guy, but it's a shame that these practices are still happening on an institutional level, and because of the promise of reward, people are still going for it. But like you, I'd love to know how far back this stretches and how vast it stretches as well.
Yeah, I think next year we'll find out, because next year is the trial.
Well, how long will that go on for?
Honestly,
it is probably another 10 years.
Yeah.
Yep. Anyway, on that, I'm going to move on to our second news story of the week. TikTok is making it mandatory for TikTok shop brands to use a new AI ad tool starting from September 1st. Introduced in 2024, the TikTok tool uses an AI algorithm to decide how to get advertisers the most bang for their buck. Some brands are unhappy about the shift and want to retain control over their ad targeting. So how might this mandatory change the relationship between TikTok and its sellers? Teddy, to you.
So I think this poses challenges, obviously, for advertisers, like tracking their TikTok performance beyond TikTok Shop. I think one of the red flags that I read about is that it attributes all the purchases on the platform to the tool, even if people didn't see the ad, which I think it's not really great. It's very bad. I think maybe the way it optimizes the campaign, it optimizes the placement might help. Or, you know, the way it boosts revenue and all of that. But for me, how the brands that have much more compliance will be able to use that platform, you know, going forward? I think this is the question. And I think probably bigger brands or brands with more compliance who have to choose, you know, to advertise on TikTok through this AI tool or to not advertise at all, because I don't see any middle ground if that is mandatory going forward.
Yeah. Mm. What do you think it's going to mean for brands approaching this?
Yeah, I think it's like, it's the mandatory part that's the shame. Like Teddy said, it's, you know, it is going to be useful for some people. It'd be useful, again, down to small individuals and small businesses who don't have the vast waves of people to work on their ad targeting and stuff like that. Having an AI tool that optimizes for them could be a boon to their services, but there's also companies that will want to choose and want to have a little bit more say over what their creative's doing and who they're reaching. So, yeah, I think it's just the mandatory thing that's the sticking point here. And yeah, like Teddy said, it sort of makes it a black and white choice between being on TikTok or not, which I guess is business. But it's a shame for a vast swathe of advertisers who would actually like to be involved in their targeting, while it still is helpful for those that don't have the capacity or don't want to.
Yeah, just on the point there of the larger versus smaller businesses, it was actually stated that while a variety of big brands have embraced the platform, including the likes of Anchor, Maybelline, Philips, Garnier and Crocs, TikTok has had an easier time pitching to smaller sellers. So why do you think TikTok has been especially successful in attracting the smaller sellers?
I think because with TikTok Shop, it's really plug and play for them. They can really upload their products and go straight away to the consumer, to the market, put it out there. They don't need to have a media background. They don't need to have, you know, a DSP. They just go out there and do it. I think the same way why they're choosing Meta, for example. So I think this is a similar case. And it also will be much easier for them with this AI tool, I can only presume, because they won't have to think about targeting and put their marketing hat on. They just put everything and straight away is going out to the consumer. But again, we don't know anything. I don't think that TikTok for now will showcase how they choose the targeting, how they choose the placement, and all the different bits and insights that you can use to then kind of transform your strategy, optimize your strategy going forward. Yeah.
Do you think brands are going to find ways then that they will work within the AI system? Or do you think there's going to be pushback against losing control over their ad targeting?
I think we are now pushing back because we have that choice. Mm-hmm. And as we know, these big brands, they don't want to give us any choice. So I would think that we'll actually have to get used to working with that. And I think one of the challenges will really be having an omni-channel strategy, but almost TikTok having a separate strategy from the whole omni-channel strategy, because you don't actually know what's happening there, right? You don't know how to plan that. You can only plan, I'm going to put these assets in and they're going to run, nothing else.
John?
Yeah, it removes, exactly like Teddy said, it removes it as a strand for planning. Mm-hmm. It's just it's not like we are giving our money to TikTok here and here and here. It's just like, oh, we're giving our money to TikTok. It does the rest, which again, can be attractive for those who don't have the time, don't have the inclination, but for those who do and media plan as a career, as part of their company, it's, I'd expect pushback because it's a powerful channel and we know it is, like, you know, the reach is, it's incredible. And it's really, it's TikTok Shop's a big thing. We've seen how it's taken off in other parts of the world through ATS events, and it is a strong proposition. But I think larger brands will want to be able to have a customizable version of it that they target themselves. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's pushback and change on this.
What do you think it says about the platform's approach to positioning itself in the e-commerce space?
They are shifting to really do that. We see that across the board with every platform going forward, and this is the future. Obviously, I think TikTok has some live kind of e-commerce strategy going on at the moment as well, which are very successful. We see how that is working in China too. So we're really trying to replicate that here. But it's definitely going forward, and maybe this is a way for us to reconsider the role of the marketeer, as you said, when it comes to planning, when it comes to buying, when it comes to strategy, because if all of this platform at some point in time bring this AI to and make it mandatory to use it, as you said, where planning and buying, where is this team going?
Yeah,
it links with the first story. It's like we are just at the point where these companies, like AI has accelerated the desire of companies to just ask people to throw money into their black box and get a thumbs up for their results. And that takes some of the craft out of media planning. I think, Teddy, for me, it's like, and, you know, if we know it's just the heart of the business, the strategy side, it's about being clever and creative and knowing your audience. And this takes away that from you. It just tells you, we will optimize and send it where we want to send it and then tell you how we did. And it is, I don't know, where's the fun?
Yeah.
And how you actually attract people to the industry, Especially entry level.
Yeah, it's just shifting budget in a spreadsheet rather than actually any planning and thought about it. It's it's creating a very different, more dull world for media planners, I think.
Sure. And then I guess just last question on this. And it's not going to be really optimistic, but it's more about the risks for brands and what risks will they face when solely relying on TikTok's AI-driven ad system?
Their data, their insights, that will really harm their long-term strategy, long-term planning, as we talk about that. I think that's one of the main things. And we never know what is happening on the back end and how the AI, you know, is using the different assets to choose the placement, to choose the targeting. We don't know anything about that.
So. You're thinking data as well, John? The other risks?
I don't know. I don't sell on TikTok and I don't know what the back end looks like or what the dashboard looks like that a seller gets. But okay, I hope it would provide a more of a breakdown of at least who it has chosen to show your advert to or to show your product to. Because then, data completely. If you have no real idea of your audience apart from a number of million people that impressions that you got off, then It's difficult to define all your other media strategy and know who your key audience is. It's like, it's fascinating. But I would hope that that is in the, you know, I hope the dashboard does at least give you some demographics and knowing who's, where it's popular. I don't know enough about it to say, but yeah, it's removing some of the detail. And like Telly said, the data is dangerous for brands.
Yeah. And I think, you know, now they're rolling that out. They're going to see how it goes. And you just said they'll definitely customize it, make it, you know, I don't know, more insights for people to see. But also it opens the question of our brand safety. What is happening with all the keywords and brand safety and, you know, where brands appear next to what type of content? No one is talking about that. And we know how important that is for brands. So it's definitely opening that question too.
Mm. Yeah, well, it's clear, but there's a shift and it's going to test how much control brands are willing to give up. Yeah. Okay, well, let's close the bear on this story and move on to our third story for the week. Wired and Business Insider have removed news features written by a freelance journalist after concerns they are likely AI-generated works of fiction. Several other UK and US online publications have published questionable articles by the same person, going by the name of Margot Blanchard since April. Teddy, what safeguards should publishers adopt to try and prevent these AI-generated misinformed articles?
So maybe the first thing is not to do a background check, but kind of check if the person you hire is a real person. There were many red flags. Let's put it that way. Many red flags. This person wanted to be paid only on PayPal, I think, or by check. They didn't want it to provide personal information or documents. Also, even though the article was run through two third-party AI detection tools, it came out clear, which is very interesting. But also we know that this person or whatever wrote it can rewrite it and submit it. And also AI checking for AI, I mean, come on. And I think what is needed is to have the same checks as we have when we set up a campaign. So you need to have a Q&A, you need to have checklists, you need to work with the different teams, you need to work with fact checkers in the newsroom, you need to work with your research team, you need to get a top edit from a more senior editor, because with the help of AI, there can be hundreds or thousands articles written in a day, but they don't have the substance that an article written by a real human have.
Yeah, the story was very bizarre, to be honest. John, anything to add there in terms of safeguards?
I mean, like, this is, it is so close to my heart, this story, obviously, because I spend a lot of time commissioning articles and editing articles, my team does. And looking through, it's like, could I have been tricked? Would I have been tricked? And it's, I'm not arrogant enough to think that I couldn't be. Like, in this case, like, there were, as Teddy said, enough red flags for me. Like, being paid in a certain way is an immediate red flag. That's something to always double check on and see what's going on. But it is pretty easy for these, like, for people to, if they can generate an AI article, they can generate an AI person with an AI blog with, you know, filled with articles. And I saw this and it made me think about people I've commissioned recently. It's like, wow, I hope those guys are real. and I'm fairly confident they are. And I do, like, I have a, like, developed a bit of a sense for it. I can tell, like, it's, you know, it's part of editing for years. You have a feeling, but it's like, it's smart stuff that, and when it's, we are in a particularly difficult time for the industry and there's a lot of pressure in a lot of different publications on article quotas, on page views and stuff like that. And sometimes editors need to get stuff out pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And this is where AI stuff's going to thrive, because you get the, like, you get the pitch, you want to, you like the look of the story. And you'll hit go, and that's not to say that it's not lazy editing. Like, it needs a little bit more craft than that. It needs a little bit more nuance and quality assessment. But AI and the speed at which it's developed has made it really, really hard. So safeguards are difficult. I agree with you totally on the AI assessment tools. I don't believe they work all the time. So that's like a safeguard that you should check, but also don't trust in completely. It's odd stuff, but I'm not surprised that even like amazing publications like Wired and Business Insider, who do wonderful work, I'm not surprised that they're slipping through the cracks.
Yeah.
Because of the pressures on the industry, pressures on editors, and also how really good this stuff is getting through the cracks.
And that's it as well. Like, it's going to become a lot harder to spot situations like this.
Yeah.
So these safeguards and standards are really important to try and identify that.
Yeah, but I also think in this particular case, we need to uphold WIRE for telling about their experience and what has actually happened, kind of give advice and, you know, also warn the industry that this is happening. We spoke about that last year, I think, in many conferences. We spoke about it. This is a reality now. So what we need to do to really prevent it. And I think people who are journalists, they have integrity. And for me, journalism and this profession are people who are extremely talented. And no robot can really replace that, replace the substance they give. They're great storytellers. And it shows through their articles too.
Yeah.
100%. And on that, like, how can incidents like this potentially impact readers' trust then in journalism?
So, according to Reuters, currently only 41% of people are confident in journalism worldwide, which is a significant decline from previous year, and also significant decline from 2022 when this percentage was 60%. So it has really fallen down. Additionally, half of the global sample, so 58% of people around the world, express concern about distinguishing truth from falsehood online, which speaks volumes. And we know this is happening. People don't know what to do. People don't know what to believe. And I think to improve trust, people want really journalists to be impartial, to be accurate, to be transparent. I think their reporting practices need to be improved when it comes to AI, especially. I think for me, the reader is giving a publication their most precious resource, which is their time. And we really need to respect that and give back as much as we can in terms of transparency. I think that AI is a tool, is not a solution, and it definitely needs to be used as one. And additionally on that, I haven't seen any AI-specific journalism regulations yet, which made me think just how, not just our industry, but in the world, we're really waiting until things get worse to start actually thinking about prevention. And while we're thinking about prevention, another bad thing happened. And while we're thinking about, oh, let's actually put that into practice, we already have a million bad things that have happened. So I'm thinking if you're putting any tool out there, you need to think about regulations. The three stories that we spoke about today, I think this is the main takeaway and what we can do to help and support that, because I'm sure the industry really wants to help, really want to be involved and prevent things like this happen in future.
Yeah, absolutely. It is very important. And you're right, there's going to be a lot more happening before there are regulations put in place. John, just on the figures that Teddy referenced, on the trust in readers at 41%, down from 60%, I believe. What are your feelings on that?
No surprise. It's horribly low, but in this era that we're heading into rapidly, like, it's hard. I'm sounding so miserable today. but it's hard to know what's real. It really is. Like, you know, we work in media, consider ourselves pretty savvy, I think, about this stuff. But this AI video is coming on leaps and bounds by the day. It's, you know, 2 years ago, it could draw a funny picture of a duck and people thought that was great. And now it's like, recreating movie style 4K video with maybe an extra finger or something weird, but it's like, it's still incredibly good. The line between like what's real and what isn't is being blurred by the day. And like audiences would really struggle to discriminate. And I'm not surprised trust is so low, because what can you really trust? Yeah. And the fact, like I say, strong brands like Wired, Business Insider, like the trust there is strong in those publications. They live by that. Like, people love going to Wired for all their kinds of things. Wired done so well recently with everything that they've covered, on a lot of political stuff as well as a lot of tech stuff. Business Insider is a great publication, but it's like stuff slipping through, and it's increasingly hard for people. So I'm not surprised that figures are that low. It concerns me deeply, but I wonder what can be done regulation-wise if the, you know, the horse is bolted, if the toothpaste out of the tube, whatever metaphor we choose to use. We something needs to be done quick, or it won't be.
Yeah. Thanks for trying to make that a little bit more optimistic as a closing.
I tried. Oh, what a day.
Well, yeah, great stories to pick this week to discuss. But yeah, definitely on the publisher side there's some heavy conversations, and Teddy, you're going to be diving into even more publisher-focused conversations at ATS London in less than 2 weeks' time. But yeah, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been great having you on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And John, as always, thank you very much.
Thank you for letting me bring the misery, as always.
I would like to say any time, but yeah. Anyway, thank you for listening, everybody. And that's it from the MadTech Podcast this week. We look forward to you tuning in next week.
You've been listening to the MadTech Podcast, brought to you by ExchangeWire.